with our very special guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM, William Henry, the investigative mythologist, as we talk about his latest work, The Secret of Sion. And we'll be back with William in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. William, enlighten us a little bit about this advanced race of humans. Exactly what are we talking about? What do they look like? Do they look like us?
That's one of the most profound pieces of research that I filled in with The Secret of Sion. Is I kept hearing these references in these Gnostic texts. For example, a moment ago I mentioned the secret book of John, when Jesus manifests as a being of light through a hole in heaven to John. And he tells him, I'm here to tell you about what was, what is, and what will be, and about the immovable race of the perfect light humans. And when I heard that at first, I didn't quite get what he was talking about. What do you mean? Is there another race of humanity, the immovable race of the perfect light humans? And as I pulled on this thread, I found out that, in fact, that's exactly what he was describing, is there's another race, an advanced race of human beings who have gone through the full enlightenment or awakening of the human potential and transform themselves into light beings. And they're called the race. They're described as a tribe of beings. They're described as eternal light beings. They dwell in Sion, the book of Hebrews, one of the which is found in the New Testament, or excuse me, in the Bible, is they're referred to as just humans made perfect. And so over and again, when they describe this race, and this isn't just the Judeo-Christian tradition that describes them as perfect, other traditions as well talk about this separate race that wear the light body and are referred to as perfect light humans, awakened humans, light humans, descriptions of this sort. And what it refers to is that they have put on this radiant garment of light. They are literally light beings. However, they have the ability to manifest in human form as well. Then they can dematerialize into their light body form and return to Sion at the center of the galaxy, or perhaps travel to wherever they would like to go.
Is it possible that they're angels?
We could think of some of these beings or visitations by these beings as angels. Technically, the word angel means messenger. However, there is a certain class of angel called seraphim, who are the highest order of angels, who dwell at God's throne, which I propose is Sion in the center of the Milky Way galaxy. During the Renaissance, they did enormous research into this question that we're talking about right now, George. The de Medici family spent the equivalent of $50 million in today's dollars in search of the Corpus Hermeticum, of the ancient secrets of Egypt, about exactly how does a human being transform themselves into a being of light. Then what the de Medicis did is they hired master painters like Botticelli and others to encode their findings in the artwork of the Renaissance, or Renaissance, which is what we see in galleries in Florence and in other parts of Italy. But what we find is that there was this belief that became quite popular among the initiated, the awakened of the Renaissance, that humans could transform themselves into seraphim, into this highest order of angels, and go and dwell at the throne of God. I mean, this is an extraordinary potential that we're talking about here, and in fact, it may in fact be the destiny of each of us, that we are all on this path right now. We are somewhere on what the Gnostics described as a sort of way of light, which is demarcated by a birth, a baptism, a transfiguration, our perfection into a being of light, and then ultimately our ascension, in which we're able to then, as the New Testament says, flash and suddenly materialize on the earth plane. I mean, when Jesus appears to the Apostle Paul on the road to Damascus, he does so in a flash. How else are we to interpret this in light of him opening holes in heaven, but that he has transformed himself into a being of light and can flash, suddenly appear, and then flash, suddenly disappear?
Well, I think you're onto something here. And there's something out there once you begin to understand the concept of the universe or the multiverses. And I think you believe in that too now, don't you? The multiverse theory?
I absolutely do believe in the multiverse theory, and what I'm saying it perfectly fits in the concept of, or in the context of, what is happening in our present world, where suddenly we have proven that particles can go faster than light, that the human body, through genetic manipulation, can be transformed into something else. In the context of our discoveries, not only of what's going on at the center of our Milky Way galaxy, but also that there are hundreds of billions of galaxies out there in the known universe. And then when you multiply that, as you're suggesting here, by the multiverse theory, we're talking about us dwelling within a secret garden that is so far beyond our comprehension that it's not even funny. But what this really is, George, in my view, is an invitation. It's an invitation for us to discover who we really are and the power that's within us. And no wonder you have these elite people on the planet that seek to control and dominate this incredible, powerful force within us, but that we're all part of something incredibly magnificent.
As we get close to Christmas, and of course, everyone talks about, the gift of the Magi and everything else. Let's get your take a little bit on who you think these three travelers might have been, William.
Okay. When you really look into the story of the Magi or Magi, you find out that there really weren't just three. There was a whole tribe of them, as a matter of fact. In fact, the New Testament doesn't name or give a number of the Magi. It's just part of Christian tradition that says there were three and only three. But the research I did on them, starting with the revelation of the Magi, that Gnostic text decoded or translated by Dr. Brent Landau, was that they came from a land called Shire, which is at the easternmost edge of the ocean. That's a mystical description of a place that says, okay, these guys aren't really from here. These guys are from a place beyond the imagination, just at the edge of what we can conceive. And there's all kinds of references to tribes of beings that dwell on this kind of liminal place here, out on the edge, maybe even in another dimension. And so as I'm pulling back on the researching and pulling on the thread of the story of the Magi, I'm just kind of open-minded that, hey, maybe these guys really are super magicians, and they're seeking a magician even greater than they are. I mean, this is why Jesus is portrayed in all the earliest Christian art with the magic wand in his hand, because he was a super magi.
That's right.
And this wand that he possessed was part of a whole kit, as I call it, of accoutrements or tools that were used by these beings. And we can talk about that in a bit, because it's an enormously fascinating subject, this kit and how it's assembled and then disassembled and then reassembled throughout history. But as I'm following the Magi and saying, okay, what if they do come from some otherworldly realm referred to as Shire? Well, where is Shire? And so I started looking at all the various Shire resonant names that appear in history. There's, for example, Abu Sir in Egypt, which is a very important temple site. Saris, a Shire resonant word, was the place where the Holy Grail was taken. But the place name that really got me going was called Sharon. Famously, Jesus is called the Rose of Sharon, the Lily of the Valley. And as I looked into the definition of the word Sharon, I found that it came from another Hebrew word called Shiron, which means body armor. But Shiron doesn't necessarily refer to body armor like a warrior would wear. When the mystics talk about body armor, they're talking about a crown that is worn before going through a portal. It's called the crown of salvation. It's a star crown of salvation. They're talking about the breastplate of righteousness, the sandals of peace that enable flight. They're talking about the sword of God and the shield of faith. They're talking about these various appendages or accoutrements that these light beings actually wear, because that's what this armor ultimately refers to, is this suit of Stargate traveling time mm-hmm. travelers.
Is it like a suit an astronaut would wear? Something like that?
Something like that, except it's not made out of technological materials. It's a spiritual body that functions mm-hmm. sort of like an astronaut's spacesuit. And I realized then that the people of Shire, the Magi, are actually representatives of this tribe of beings who have achieved this superhuman advanced capability and have put on this light body suit or Stargate traveling time traveling suit.
See, and that's where I need to comprehend that there's this distinct difference between this spiritual body like that and the physical. We're really dealing with two different things, aren't we?
We're dealing with two different things. We're dealing with the difference between a caterpillar or a cocoon, which is what the form that metaphorically we're in right now, and the butterfly. The caterpillar is earthbound, it's slow moving, it hasn't tapped into its full power. However, the butterfly can fly through the skies. The butterfly has tapped into its full power, it's becoming its true self. And that's the leap here.
How easy is it to get to that butterfly stage?
Well, actually, it's quite easy. We just have to be able to imagine it. And this is part of what my book is about. I've got over 75 illustrations of sacred art that portray this advanced light body and ascension and this kind of thing from the sacred tradition. Then we have to believe it. And then we have to live our life with the expectation that we're actually going to achieve it. We have to do the things that make it possible. And according to the de Medicis and the research they did in the Renaissance, anybody can achieve this state by becoming a being of pure light and pure love. That's how we achieve this state.
William, explain to the benefit of the people who haven't gone to the website yet the video that you sent us.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you and Lex for allowing me to put that up on the Coast site.
He's quick, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Great. Love Lex. It's fun doing the chats with him, too. Did one just a couple of months ago that was really nice. So thanks again for that.
Speaking of chats, I've got one tomorrow night with Ian Punnett, which starts at 8 o'clock Pacific time. So we must let
excellent.
People know about that. Okay.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, the video that's up on the Coast site is the first chapter of my new DVD presentation called The Light of Sion. It focuses on the Milky Way, how the vibration of the Milky Way is rising, how we are beginning to orient ourselves towards the center of the galaxy, which I find absolutely profound in light of Maya 2012 prophecy that says the center of the Milky Way is the place we want to begin focusing our consciousness upon. And so what I do is I try to take people into, this is what NASA is showing us and other observatories are discovering about the center of the galaxy. And here's what the ancients knew. I mean, we think the ancients didn't know much of anything about the stars or the galaxy, but in fact, I believe they left us a whole metaphysics about the Milky Way and how we interact with it and how from time to time that light of the center of the galaxy, Sion, begins to rise, and that's when we awaken. And that's the moment that we are living in right now.
See, but we're dealing with something physical that also branches into really the higher consciousness state, aren't we?
Absolutely. And it requires us to think out of the box, to kind of get out of our heads, actually to unite our heart and mind as we begin to approach these times and to begin to apprehend these mysteries. It takes, let me tell you, I mean, chasing these guys around, the perfect light humans, took a lot of effort on my part because we're talking about just an incredibly advanced consciousness and intelligence that these beings are trying to gift to us. And it requires that we kind of raise our vibration in a way in order to apprehend these mysteries. And that was part of the fun, if you will, of writing this book, was being able to just kind of raise my vibration and do the best I can to chase them around.
Do these light beings, angelic beings, call it whatever you want, do they ever turn physical?
Yes, they do. I mean, especially in the story of Jesus, he ate with the disciples after he achieved this light body form. He walked with the disciples. They thought he had achieved a physical form. Same thing with the Tibetans. They believe that once we achieve the rainbow body, that then we can also come back into the earthly form as well. We're talking about unlimited or beings of unlimited power here.
How many people on the planet today, William, practice this? What do you think?
About as many, I'm trying to think how this, one guru said it's about the same number as the stars that you can see at the moment the dawn breaks, which is not very many.
I was going to say, you can't see many at all.
Right. We all start out with great intentions. We have this precious gift we call life, and we all have everyday decisions about what we're going to do with this time that we have. And very few actually commit to the path this path of, call it the way of light, call it the path of righteousness, call it the path to enlightenment. But that's what we're talking about here. But the promise is that everybody can achieve it. And in fact, the teaching is that everybody can achieve it in one lifetime. And it may well be, George, that you and I have been working on this lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And it may be that this is the one where the door opens and we step through.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Is there a danger here with this portal in the middle of the Milky Way? Is it a black hole that could suck everything in?
Well, that's the way science views it. And they wonder, well, how could any beings dwell there? I don't have immediate answers for that. I'm just saying I followed this path, this trail, and this is where it led. And I hope to be able to provide those answers in the near future. So the way I look at it is that we are in an amazing position here now that we know about the center of the galaxy to begin to look back and say, wait a minute, what clues did the ancients leave for us? What path did they leave for us to follow? And that was one of the most exciting, call it, discoveries that I present in the Secret of Sion, and also I talk about it in the Light of Sion, is that there is indeed, according to these ancient traditions, a conduit, an umbilical cord, a wormhole that links Earth with the center of the galaxy. I first found this when John Major Jenkins first brought my attention to it in his book, Maya Cosmogenesis 2012. Mm-hmm. And I've talked with John about this for over almost 10 years now, because John had said that in the Maya tradition, they have this concept that Quetzalcoatl, the Mayan savior who many believe will return in 2012, travels the cosmos through what is described in the Maya tradition as a serpent rope. They show this 8-spoked wheel, which symbolizes the center of the galaxy. The galaxy opens, out pops this serpent rope, and here's Quetzalcoatl riding upon it. John said, hey, you know what? I think we can take out the archaic or shamanic term serpent rope, put in the modern term wormhole, and we have what the Mayans are saying is going to happen in 2012. A wormhole is going to open from the center of the galaxy, and here comes Quetzalcoatl, followed by perhaps a tribe of these ascended light beings, and they're coming to Earth. Well, I go over to the 15th century Russian tradition, the Russian Christian tradition, and what do I find? I find a map leading from Earth to the throne of God, which is portrayed as an 8-spoked wheel, and a connecting link between Earth and the 8-spoked wheel. And what is that connecting rope? It's a serpent. It's portrayed as a serpent with 21 rings on it that the scholars who have looked at this iconography describe as cosmic toll booths. Now, when I hear terminology like that, we're talking about an umbilical cord that links Earth with the throne of God, and it's described as serpentine with cosmic toll booths, I'm thinking Stargate. I'm thinking this is a match with what the Mayans are saying. And I found the same iconography in Italian artwork and also, most importantly, in the Tibetan artwork of the Rainbow Body tradition, where they also believe there is this cosmic conduit that links Earth with, quote-unquote, heaven. And the way we access this cosmic conduit is as beings of light.
William, you also believe we have less than 25 years to attain some freedom. Let's talk about that when we come right back. Next hour, we flip a switch and open the phone lines for you to chat with investigative mythologist William Henry. When we come back, let's find out more about why does he think we have less than 25 years? But for what? We'll find out on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with William Henry. William, lifting of this galactic center veil, does it refer to the apocalypse? And if so, what does that mean to us?
Yes. By definition, the word apocalypse means lifting the veil. And in my view, the primary veil we want to lift is we want to recognize that we, A, live in a galaxy, and now we have to orient our consciousness towards the center of the galaxy. Remember, just 500 years ago or so, people were burned at the stake and tortured for even suggesting that Earth was not the center of the universe. Now we know Earth is definitely not the center of the universe, and that, in fact, we are part of this incredible cosmic organism, this living organism that has incredible intelligence called the Milky Way. And that, to me, is what is meant by the apocalypse, because as we pull back this curtain, lift the veil, and look at the galactic center, then the next question is, well, is there anybody dwelling there? And if so, who lives there? And those questions are answered in the Gnostic text. The place name is called Sion, and the inhabitants are advanced or ascended humans who have transformed themselves into beings of light. And now with that revelation, with that disclosure, which is what we're talking about here, who cares about these slow-moving guys with technology and gee whiz, they want to turn us into robots. Give me a break. I'm not interested in those guys. I'm interested in the guys that want to see us ascend, that want us to see us become Christ-like beings, beings of pure light and pure love, which is the definition of a Christ-like being. That's the disclosure that is most important to me.
You have talked about, well, we've got about 25 years left to attain some kind of freedom or face some kind of bizarre future. What's that all mean?
Well, there's three people that I want to put statements together, whose statements I want to put together. One, I recently heard Alex Jones say that the war for human liberty against total dehumanization is on now. I agree with him totally, but I think we're facing a huge disaster, but it's not financial or political. It's cosmic, because according to the Gnostics, in order to achieve true liberty, we get it from ourselves, not from some political organization or even a religious organization. We have to connect with our higher self in a supernatural cosmic power or essence that's referred to as the hidden power. It's called exousia by the Gnostics, and it's a transmittable power. Our higher self wants us to connect with this power, and its primary question is one that is apropos, especially at this time, and that is, what would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do with your life if you weren't afraid? What new pathways would you open up? What things would you begin doing if you weren't locked into fear based upon what somebody else is telling you you should be fearful of? So that's one piece. A second person that I paid close attention to is an author by the name of Paul Davies. He's a theoretical physicist.
He's great, isn't he?
He's wonderful. But he believes that biological intelligence, and in fact, our body, is only a transitory phenomena, and I agree with him. It's a fleeting phase in the evolution of the universe, and he believes, Davies does, that if we encounter extraterrestrial intelligence, he thinks it's overwhelmingly likely it's going to be post-biological in nature. He believes that it's going to be an artificially intelligent machine that we're going to encounter. That takes us to the third person, who is Ray Kurzweil, who believes that by 2020, we'll have computers that are powerful enough to simulate the human brain. By 2029, we'll have completed the reverse engineering of the human brain. By 2035, humans are no longer needed. So here we go. Total dehumanization being faced by on a political and financial plane. The prospect that the only way, according to science, that we're actually going to be able to step into the stars is as robots, and the belief by cutting-edge scientists that we have 15 years only to wait for that reality to happen. I look at this, and I'm frightened by this, George, to be perfectly honest with you, because what the ancients said is the only way you're getting into the stars, actually, is as a being of pure light and pure love, because they who are out there don't want a bunch of riffraff running around. They don't want these creepy little militaristic types running around with this super advanced technology in the universe, God forbid, exporting it to Mars or God knows where, and having the opportunity to spread the fear virus or to spread the war virus that is infecting our planet at this moment.
Well, where does this black ops fear come from, and how far will it go?
Well, it's in part political. It's designed to keep us under control. We all know that. How far will it go? Will it go to a mass genocide? That's a possibility. I mean, we saw, for example, during the Inquisition, we saw the church exterminate as many as 1 million men, women, and children, Cathars. They were a group that were interested in perfection and following these Gnostic teachings we've been discussing this evening, and they fully believe that they can turn themselves into perfect light humans and open these portals or gateways. In fact, the Coast website features a piece of artwork by an artist named Hieronymus Bosch that portrays what is called the Christ column, or the column of glory, that shows one of the Cathar souls ascending through a glassy cylinder, a tube of light filled with stars.
He was a strange, good artist, wasn't he?
Oh, my God.
His Garden of Earthly Delights, one of the most bizarre paintings I've ever seen.
It's truly, truly wild looking. And it's possible that Hieronymus Bosch actually had a vision of going through what we today would call a stargate. His painting, The Ascent of the Empyrean, is often cited by near-death experience researchers as a profound example of the tube of light, the tunnel of light, or the stargate that leads from Earth into a higher, finer realm. What we have to be aware of here is that there is definitely a force on this planet that does not want this advanced or enlightenment teaching spread throughout the world. Problem is that you can't have a planet full of Christ-like beings running around. They're unmanageable and they don't pay taxes. And so you have these teachings that are put out there that disempower us, that in fact dehumanize us. And this is the great disaster that we're facing right now, because as I read the story about the just humans made perfect who dwell in Sion, the center of the galaxy, I just pull out my dictionary and I look up the definition of the word human. And what human means is a member of the species Homo sapien, not animal, divine, or machine. And my concern is, George, is that if they are successful in conning us into implanting the new chips in our eyes that make us fully trackable, make us ultra-intelligent, that turn our bodies into iPods, that we will not be able to achieve our full manifestation as humans. We will not be able to achieve the light body because a machine does not love. So
no,
we're on the brink of eliminating love from our civilization. That's the stakes that we're facing right now.
How do you think they will convince us to get a chip, whether, as you say, in the eye or in your palm of your hand? How do you think they're going to try to convince us to do that? Because they will try.
Oh, they're doing it already. It's our culture is moving in this direction where we're supporting the concept, hey, we like the idea of instant communication, instant knowledge. You want to know even more? You want to be even stronger? You want to be even smarter? Well, all you got to do is have this chip implanted in your eyes. The University of Michigan has this brand new chip, the smallest one that's out. That
you can go through a cash line, cashier's line.
In 20 seconds,
they'll say, yeah.
Yeah, in the blink of an eye. How about if we just put this tattoo on you? The new computers are actually going to be tattoos that go right into the skin where, gosh, you know, now you're fully trackable. What if you get lost? Now we'll know exactly where you are. We can help you find your way. These are simple examples, but ultimately what they're going to entice us with is the power angle, that you will be stronger. You will be smarter as a result of doing this. And if you don't do it, you know, at least according to the paranoid spin on this, you won't fit in society any longer. And you won't be able to buy, you won't be able to sell. That's what the Bible prophecy supposedly says. And we're seeing it manifest right before our very eyes.
Well, we sure are. And here it comes, William.
Less than 20 years. And these are the decisions that we're making right now. And I'm not saying throw away your computer. I'm not saying throw away your iPhone. What I am saying, though, is that the next step is the iPhone or the cell phone is going to go in our teeth, but ultimately the destination is the pineal gland. It's the cell phone industry that's doing the most research right now on the pineal gland because they understand that it's got these microcrystals attached to it that make it literally a wireless transmitter. We're supposed to be using our pineal gland in order to connect with the mystic currents, the river of life coming from the center of the Milky Way galaxy that awaken us and enlighten us and produce ultimately an oil, a secretion within our body that manifests our light body. But instead, we've got these technologists out there that are saying, bingo, let's use it as a cell phone and let's implant some chips in there that amplify the signal coming into our wireless transmitter, the pineal gland. That's where it's going. So what we have to recognize is that we are supporting this with our purchases. we're actually encouraging it, because we start to wear our cell phone in our ears right now. And we are saying yes to this movement. And what I'm saying is, guys, we got to wake up, because where this is going, and it may in fact be unstoppable if Ray Kurzweil is right. In fact, he says it would be in a way dangerous and detrimental if we didn't turn ourselves into cyborgs. And I'm saying, are you out of your mind?
What is a Stargate kit, William?
This is one of the most fascinating and incredible things I write about in The Secret of Sion, which I just want to mention, George, it's available as a Kindle book. That's my first Kindle book, so I'm
really excited
about that.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Good yeah, finally got that together. The kit. I kept seeing these pieces come together in various stories, and even found it in the artwork as well, where, for example, the crucifixion, which I view as a gateway event in which Jesus manifests his full light being potential, there are various tools that are present there. There's a purple robe symbolizing the light body or a glorification. There's a crown of thorns. There's a rod or a reed. There is some kind of a sponge that's filled with maybe a narcotic, possibly, and these other tools that get put together as a kit. And the more I looked at that, I realized that this crown of thorns, in the Gnostic tradition, that's actually a star crown. It's like a helmet, to use the space suit analogy again. Mm-hmm. The star crown is required for Stargate travel. In fact, it's a helmet or a consciousness that we'll all wear in Sion, and also as the new Earth begins to manifest on the earthly plane. The cross itself was known to the ancients literally as a device that opened a gateway that enabled us to cross over into other dimensions or cross over the river of life, the Milky Way. And so as I'm looking at this ascension artwork that I've put together in The Secret of Sion, I start seeing that, in fact, the kit is actually disassembled at certain times throughout history. Moses had acquired it. Then it's reassembled at the time of Jesus. It's awaiting reassembly today. But it's actually housed in another realm. It's housed in an interdimensional realm. And I first heard about this from our good friend Sir Lawrence Gardner, who sadly passed a couple of years ago.
Yeah. That was a great loss.
It was. But Lawrence had done extensive research on the Ark of the Covenant, which is another piece of the kit, actually. And he came to the conclusion that the Ark of the Covenant had been taken to Chartres Cathedral outside of Paris, where then it was translated or teleported into another realm. I'm thinking, Lawrence, that's a pretty extreme conclusion. But he said, no, that's exactly what I think after doing all this research. Lo and behold, I start doing research on the kit and on this artwork that shows this conduit linking Earth with the throne of God, and right in the middle realm, these maps are divided into zones. The earthly zone is the lower zone, then there's 2, 3, 4, 5 zones above that. The kit is almost always shown as being housed in the second or third zone, which suggests to me that this whole kit is either parked in some other dimension or perhaps even on another planet. And it is brought to Earth at certain times when the Stargate consciousness begins to emerge, such as our time, and then it's reassembled. And I know it sounds absolutely far out, but this is what the Gnostic tradition teaches about this kit.
Well, there's so many things that are going on, William, in this universe that, you know, you understand that are just out there, that when you stop and think about it, it's all very possible, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And all we have to do to kind of get it is to, one, do a little research on what modern science is proposing these days, and then match it up with what the ancients said. I mean, the example I gave earlier is that when Jesus would manifest to the disciples, he would do so through a hole in heaven. That's not a term we use today. We don't talk about opening holes in heaven. We talk about stargates and wormholes. And once we have a modern term to equate with the ancient term, we have a better understanding of what they're describing, and they're clearly describing over and over again the opening of these gateways into heaven And very often they reference putting together this kit of various tools that are used for opening that gateway and for assisting in the transformation of humans preparatory to going through that gateway.
With your book, The Secret of Sion, how did you conceptualize this? Was this just based on years of study in history?
Well, in a way it was. It's a compilation of what I have been doing since I first started publishing books back in 96, but I started actually researching this parallel mystery tradition in the early 80s, 1982, actually. And so as I just tried to keep an open mind about it, but as I mentioned earlier, it came together when I started following around the Magi and this piece of profound perspective, let's call it, or knowledge that says, hey, these guys, the three Magi, aren't following a star. They're not following Sirius or anything like this has been proposed. They're following a star child or a star man. And in fact, this person is a representative of a whole tribe of such beings. And they are here ultimately on a rescue mission. They are here to take us home, to wake us up, and to help us to put on our crown of immortality, our full suit, our Stargate suit, if you will, the light body garment, and return us to the place where we came from.
Well, and let us get there too. William, we're going to take phone calls at the top of the hour with you. And again, tell us where people can get the Secret of Sion and the Kindle version.
The Secret of Sion is available at Amazon.com in the Kindle version, or you can go to my website, which is williamhenry.net. I've got several versions available there, including a beautiful coffee table version of it where all the paintings and photographs I've taken are in full color. I've also got a version of it in PDF format on a CD that you can read on your computer or print out. And that's really nice because these images, these paintings, are not just designed to be pretty pictures. They're actually, according to the artists who conceived them and created them, they're literally considered to be portals or gateways in and of themselves, so that as you meditate on them and contemplate on them and reflect on them, the energy of this divine realm begins to be imprinted in your energy field. It's an incredible, incredible technique or technology that these artists were able to use. In fact, my wife Claire has started making what she calls sacred reflection. She's taken some of the key pieces of art used in my book and wonderfully created these pieces of art out of them that you can put in your household or put around you so that you're constantly inspired by these teachings.
All right, very good. William Henry, his website, williamhenry.net. When we come back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM, we shall take your phone calls with him. Fast night tonight. We'll be right back.